Hello everyone, and welcome back to the MTG Novels Project. The MTG Novels Project is available both on YouTube and as a podcast version. Check the description for more details. A legal note. This is an unofficial audiobook with original content belonging to Wizards of the Coast. This content is covered under 2017 Wizards of the Coast fan content policy. Listener discretion is advised. Today, we will continue with Chapter 23 of Planeswalker by Lynn Abbey. Urza walked them to the royal city shortly before sundown. Knowing that Pinkar was crowded with revelers and that the journey would leave Retepe incapacitated, Urza strode out of the between world near the orchard where Zanch had bowed the Phyrexian priest. Other than birds and insects, there were no witnesses to the trio's arrival. Few signs of the previous year's skirmish remained. Trees still sported scorches and unprotective branches, and there was a gap in the geometric rows where a broken tree had been removed. Retepe was stunned and shivering. Urza knelt beside him, healing him with warm, radiant hands and saying nothing about the small fortune in gold hung around his neck. "You'll be careful getting over the walls," Urza said to Zancha while Retepe finished his recovery. "Of course," she replied, irritable because she was suddenly anxious about entering the city. Neither of them had asked her if she wanted the spider scream from the plazas of Avahir's great temple, not far from the catacombs where she'd encountered Gix. Zancha knew she would have lied even if they had. She'd never told Urza about the demon before, and events had moved too swiftly since Nargal Bul to tell him now. Besides, she hadn't expected to be anxious. If the demon wanted to find her, he could have found her. Phyrexian demons were many terrible things, but they weren't shape-changers the word Urza was. If Gix hadn't preserved Zancha to any of the out-of-the-way places she'd been since their encounter, she didn't expect him to simply appear in the middle of the Pinkar City's crowded plaza. "You'll need these." Urza offered her two lumps of milk-white wax. She hesitated before taking them and asked a question. "Why?" with her eyes. "You're vulnerable, and armor might not be enough protection. Plug your ears first. You'll know when, and you'll have time. Don't fret about it." He must think the spires themselves were what made her jumpy, and he might have been right, if it weren't for Gix. "I won't worry," she lied, and tucked the wax in the hem of her sleeves. Then she asked questions she'd been avoiding. "Afterwards, should I break the crystal?" She had the one he'd given her for Nezhar Bul. "I'll find you." Zancha dipped her chin. After 3,000 years, it would end without even a goodbye. She could see Kayla frowning in her mind's eye. The antiquity war should have prepared her for this. Urza walked away. She and Retepe waited silently for sundown. Their lives were unraveling, pulled apart between the past and the future. Zancha wanted to hold the present tight. This past year of Retepe was as close as she's ever come to forgetting that she hadn't been born. She sensed that once the present became the past, regardless of whatever lay in the future, these moments wouldn't be recaptured. But when Zancha looked at Retepe, staring northwest towards the city of his past and future, she had nothing to say to him until the city darkened and the first stars had appeared. "It's time," she said. They sat together as Zancha recited her mnemonic and the sphere formed around them. Cunty folk who didn't want to pay for a room within the city's walls had pitched tents in the fields and fairgrounds beyond the walls. Between the smoke from the cook fires and the scattering of clouds overhead, Zancha had no trouble getting them over the walls and above the southeast quarter of the city. Pepe said he knew the area and provided directions to a quiet streets, the long, abandoned courthouse of a burned-out house. "You lived here?" Zancha asked when the sphere had collapsed. He pointed at a gap in the second-story window. "Last I saw, it was burning. My mother was yelling at my father, telling him to carry me and forget about his precious books." "Did he?" "Yes." Retepe put his arms on a charred door. It opened part way, then struck a fallen roof beam. "We weren't poor. I thought by now someone would have taken advantage of our misfortune." Zancha took his hand, tugging him towards the alley that led back to the street. "Remember how you said everything was smaller since Urza's war? Everything's even smaller in Pinkar City." She and Urza weren't the only ones letting go of their pasts. Zancha could almost hear Retepe's disillusionment as they made their way to the wide plaza between the royal palace and Avrohir's temple. There were as many empty houses as occupied ones, and those that were inhabited had shuttered windows, despite the summer humidity. Their doors were strapped with iron, but Pepe didn't see anyone he might recognize, because they didn't see anyone at all. The sounds of the festival came filtering over the rooftops, along with the faint scent of sleepers, but the neighborhoods were locked tight. When they got to the great plaza between Taberna's palace and Avahir's temple, they understood why, and saw why so many festival goers had chosen to pitch tents outside the city walls. The crowd was sullen and mean-spirited, looking for fights, and by the sounds of it, fighting them with each other. Most of them were men dressed as Vertepi and Zancha were dressed, in the nondescript garments of the countryside. The few women who Zancha could not see disappear appeared to be anyone's wife, mother, daughter, or sister. Not quite the family gathering Vertepi had promised. He didn't say a word when the crowd surged and parted, giving them a glance of 8 grim-faced men coming through a palace gate, headed for Avahir's temple. The 2 men were uniformed in black dyed leather and chainmail, except for their sleeveless surcoats, which bore a broad red stripe across the hem. 2 of them carried torches that could double as pole arms. The other 6 carried short halberds, wicked weapons with a crescent axe facing one direction, and a sharpened gut hook going the other. Zancha knew the kind of damage such weapons could do against a mostly armored mob. Someone muttered fighting words, but not loud enough for red-striped ears. That would come later, Zancha figured her hopes were futile. Both sides wouldn't be satisfied with anything less than bloodshed. I don't know what happened, Vertepi stammered. Sleepers? He wanted an affirmative answer, which Zancha couldn't give. There was oil in the air. The smell faint, and mostly coming from the temple or the palace. Both still secure with their separate walls. We happen, Zancha replied, as grim as their upset faces. We made sure the truth got out, didn't we? These are your folk, Vertepi, ordinary Afuns, the ones who got caught up with the red stripes and the ones who didn't. Now everybody's got a grudge. Screaming spiders and Phyrexians wouldn't just get in the way. I was afraid what would happen if we took out the red stripes and the Phyrexians. But this is worse than I imagined it could ever be, Vertepi said. His hand rested momentarily on her shoulder, then fell away. Closer to the temple, the plaza erupted in shouts and screams. Vertepi succumbed to gawking curiosity as he eased past Zancha for a better look at the skirmish. She grabbed his arms and rocked him back on his heels. Unless you know a better place with food and bed, she snapped, I say we go to ground in your family's old courtyard. They were traveling light on everything but gold. This will be calmer come daylight, or the whole city would be in flames, she added. Without much confidence, Pepe said that the better inns were on the western side of the plaza. Zancha, who hadn't eaten since the previous night in Najjar Bul, was game, though she had to grab Pepe's arm again to keep him from striking off through the middle of the plaza. Forget you ever knew this place, all right? Pay attention to what you see, not what you remember, she advised as they headed north, towards the sea and the palace. They were on the cobblestone streets near the Red Stripe Barracks, doing their best not to attract attention, when the temple's gongs rang out. This time, Zancha expected the worst, and would have gotten bolted for any shadow large enough to contain the sphere if Vertepi had held her back. There's a procession every night, he said. That's what everyone's here for, what they're supposed to be here for. The high priest marked the book around and put it on the dais until midnight. Zancha noticed the hulking white drape platform in the middle of the plaza for the first time. Every night? She asked, thinking of tomorrow night when the spiders would scream. Vertepi nodded. She nodded too, seeing to the heart of his requests. You've been thinking about this from the moment Urza started talking about exposing the sleepers with the glimmer mood. So why exactly put shutter spiders on the altar? Because the book won't be there when the altar's destroyed. I figured it would shame the Shraddha, whatever's left of them. And I wanted the Shroud ashamed at the same time the red stripes were exposed. I didn't expect red stripes to be leading the procession. He cocked his head towards the temple, where what he described was happening. The same 8 armored men they'd seen earlier marching at the head of the short parade where the focal point was an ornately shrouded litter bearing Avahir's holy book. The tome's container was borne on the shoulder of 4 priests, at least the one who reeked of oil. Zancha glanced up at the sky. The glimmer moon had risen, But though she knew the habits of the larger moons and its phases, she'd always regard the smaller moons as a nuisance. Sometimes there, sometimes not, never welcome. She didn't know if it rose earlier or later each day, and wasn't completely clear in the whole striking the zenith moment that Urza was counting on. They just carried the booger to the Darius and carried back at midnight, a couple thousand paces. You're not hoping for something to happen when they're carrying it, are you? If Otepe had wanted to shame the Shrada, she couldn't imagine anything more effective than having the sleeper collapse while the holy book's leader was sitting on his shoulder. Otepe replied, but before he could specify which question he'd answered, the nearest palace gate swung open. More armed and armored red stripes emerged. A sleeper marched in the second octet. He passed so close that Zanzo wasn't sure she knew which of the eight it was. A clean-shaven young man, not apparently much older than Otepe, and not handsome either. His mouth and nose were too big for his face, his eyes too small. When he turned and stared, Sancho's blood cooled. She forced her head to remain still and her eyes to lose focus. He might not be able to tell she'd been watching him. Sancho held her breath, too, though that surely was too late. When the octet had passed, she started walking again. The dais was still unburdened when they reached the western plaza where the guild's inns, each a little fortress, stood behind their closed gate walls. Otepe handed the negotiations with the guild guards, while Zanche watched the procession go round and round the plaza. The joint guild of barbers and surgeons had a room behind the kitchen, for which they wanted an exorbitant amount of copper and silver, but not in any form Zanche or Otepe carried. Fortunately, but not as she suspected, coincidentally, there's a money changer's booth butted up against the barber's festival tower. They wound up in a dust-choked garret that Zancha was sure had been home to a flock of pigeons earlier in the day. The food will be good, Otepe promised, once they cleaned the quarters. Don't say another word. You've been wrong about everything else. If you keep quiet now, the meal may at least be edible. She was jesting, resorting to the rough kind of humor that worked well on the Ulhran Ridge, and floundered here in the city. But the food was good. They developed roast lamb with sweet herbs, a thick, grainy paste that tasted of nuts and saffron, honey-glazed bread, and an overflowing jug of the berry wine Sardoni for the festival of fruits. It wasn't worth the silver they paid for it, but it was good nonetheless. They hauled the remaining wine up to the top of the stairs when they were finished. The garret overhung a blind alley, but a bit of acrobatics put them on the roof and gave them one of the better views of the plaza that Pinkar had to offer. A breeze stirred the human air, making it pleasant. In the plaza, Avahir's book remained open on the dais. Red stripes stood guard while priests took turns reciting Shraddha verses from memory, or so Otepe said. Their voices didn't reach the top of the guild inn. The crowd had thinned, and what remained had settled in around 10 or 15 campfires, scattered across the cobblestones. Red stripes stood guard outside the palace and the temple. Sancha wondered who held the legions of the men who guarded the inns. Not that it mattered over much. The sky was open to her sphere, if they had to get away in a hurry. This is a good place, she decided. We can see everything that's important, and there's nothing to block the sphere if we need it. We'll watch tomorrow night from here. They stayed on the roof until the temple's gong sounded again, at midnight. The red stripes escorted the huge book into Avahir's sanctuary. They stayed on the roof until the temple's gong sounded again, at midnight, and the red stripes escorted the huge holy book into Avahir's sanctuary. What do they do if it rains? Zancha asked as they swung and slipped back to the garden. If the roof had been pleasant, the rented room was a prison. Leaving the windows open had attracted swarms of buzzing, biting insects, without improving the air. The excuse for a bed smelled as if its last occupant had been a corpse. And a sudden time corpse at that. Zancha seriously considered yawning out the sphere, if only for Otepe's sake. She breathed Phylaxian air, the ultimate standard by which foul air should be judged, and survived without a wheeze or a cough. Poor Otepe was sneezing himself inside out and short of breath. In the end, they dragged the best of the blankets up to the roof and bedded down beneath the stars. The day they'd been waiting for began before dawn, with more gongs sounding from the temple as the festival of fruits started in its fourth day. The day they had been waiting for began before dawn, with more gongs clanging from the temple as the Festival of Fruit started its fourth day. When the city gates opened, the temp encampments disgorged their pilgrims, who were on the whole far less hardened than the men who held sway in the plaza at night. There were children and flower sellers, and all the other things Otepe remembered from his own childhood. He coaxed Zancha out of the garret for bowls of berries and a second visit to Avrahir's great sanctuary. The line of petitioners waiting for Avrahir to dry their tears was prohibitively long, and the cloister passage to the priest's quarters and ultimately the crypt where she'd confronted Gix was closed off and guarded by the burliest red stripes she'd seen since arriving in the city. They glistened with oily sweat, but they weren't Phyrexians. "I can't believe they're all gone, but that one I sent last night with the litter?" Zancha mused when Dratepe had finished taking her on a brief tour of the sanctuary. Maybe Gix had pulled the sanctuary sleepers back. It doesn't take much practice to be a bully like a red stripe, but a priest has to do things right. "You put the spiders where they live? I'd feel better if I'd seen that they were still in place." "We'll find out soon enough," Ratepe replied with a sort of fatalism Zancha herself usually brought to any discussion. They were on the temple porch, looking down at the plaza from a different angle and gazing north at an afternoon storm. There's time for one more bowl of berries before the storm swept over the palace. Zancha was indifferent to sweets, but Ratepe would have eaten himself sick. She saw what they did with Avrahir's book when it rained. A team of priests who'd obviously worked together before scrambling to get the great book closed and covered with a bleached tail. "It's going to get wet and ruin sewer later," she pointed out as she and Ratepe climbed the five flights of narrow and rickety stairs to the garret. "Sooner. But it isn't too precious to be mistreated like that. It used to be there's a new book every 5 years. I think the one they got is a little bit older than that, but it's not any one specific copy of the book that matters. It's the idea of Avrahir's book and the wisdom it contains. When a new book brought into the temple, the old one is cut up and passed out. Some people say if you burn a piece of the book on New Year's Day, you'll have a better year. But some people, my father for one, kept his scraps in a special box." Ratepe fell silent and stared through the window at the rain. "Lost?" Zancha asked. "We brought it with us out of the city. I didn't even think about it after the Shraddha." He went back to staring. "Should I buy a duck?" Zancha asked, quite serious. "A duck? 6 days after the Festa of Fruits, you'll be 19. I made sure I remembered. You said your mother roasted the duck. We'll see after tonight." The festival crowds never recovered from their afternoon soaking. Hundreds of Efrons had returned to their tents beyond the walls, and a rowdy, mean-spirited element took over the plaza long before the midsummer sun was ready to set. Zancha and Ratepe were spotted standing on the roof, silhouetted by the sun. The innkeeper, a man as burly as the sanctuary red stripes, reminded them in no uncertain terms that they'd rented the garret. For an additional 2 silver bits, they'd rented the roof as well. The innkeeper offered to send up supper and another jug of berry wine. Zancha had had her fill of berries. They ate with the other guests in the commons, and another leisurely, overpriced meal, then retreated to the roof for the spectacle. The western sky was blazing, and there were 2 brawls in the plaza, one strictly among the revelers, the other between the revelers and what appeared to be a corner pair of red stripes. A different, more strident set of gongs were sounded, and a phallus of mounted warriors thundered out of the palace, maces raised and swords drawn. She couldn't decipher the details of the skirmish from the rooftops, but it wasn't long before 3 corpses were dragged away, and a handful of men, bloodied and staggering, were marched into the palace. One of the prisoners wore an empty sword belt. He wasn't a red stripe. That besieged pair had vanished back into the cadres. By a straight posture and arrogant air, even in defeat, the prisoner looked to be a nobleman, the first of that breed Zancha had seen since arriving in Pinkar City. The nobleman's appearance crystallized in a conclusion that had been lurking in Zancha's thoughts. "F.N. Pinkar had lost its leaders," he suggested to Ratepe. "Whenever I look, wherever, at the red stripes, at the temple, or at the mob down there, I don't see anyone taking charge. If there are leaders, they're giving their orders in secret and watching what happens from a distance. But they're not leading from the front." But Tappy had expected an explanation for that absence. Ephraim Pucar is not like Bazarat and Malvern, in places like that where every man, woman, child answers to a lord. Our ancestors left the way behind at the founding. It's written in Avatir's book. We have a season for making decisions. Winter time, when the harvest's been gathered, and there's time to sit and talk. Where's your king? Where's Taberna? When I came here 20 years ago, he was visible. If there have been riots outside his palace, the way there's been last night and tonight, he'd have been out here. If not him, then someone. A high priest, an old man, even a merchant. There are men and women who could speak louder than the mob. Look down there. Folk have been killed, and that's no true reaction. There's anger everywhere, but nobody's gathering it and turning it into a weapon. Ephraims aren't sheep. We think for ourselves. But Tepe countered, quickly, a reply that had the sound of an overlearned lesson. Well, it's strange, very strange. It's not like anything I've seen before, and it doesn't happen very often. It's not the way Ephraim Pucar was 20 years ago. Your king or something would be visible. Ephraims may be sheep, but Tepe, but without leaders to stop them, I don't wonder that the Red Stripes and the Shrouded were able to cause so much trouble for you. Are you saying Phyrexians were with the Shrouded and the Red Stripes in the Stark? Watepe was incredulous, sarcastic, but as soon as Zasha thought about her answers, she realized, yes, I am. I found Gix in Avahir's crypt, but I probably could have found him in the palaces as easily. Do you think he's still here? He might be. That passageway I saw wasn't like an ambulator, but Gix was too big to chase me up the stairs. If he's here, he's not going to come walking out through the sanctuary doors. Watepe said nothing as the sunset aged from amber to lavender. Then, in little more than a whisper, he said, in the war, Urza and Misha's war, the Brotherhood of Gix made themselves useful to both sides. They pretended to be neutral. Neither Misha nor Urza questioned them, but they answered to Gix, didn't they? The Gix in Avahir's temple. The Gix who made you. He controlled the Brotherhood, and the Brotherhood manipulated the brothers. Avahir's sweet mercy, Gix, the Phyrexians, did control that war. Kayla Bing Krug said, never forget the mistakes we made. But she didn't suspect the real rot. His voice trailed off, returned. It's happening again, isn't it? Here and everywhere, and no one's seeing it come. Urza has. Sancho let out a pent-up breath. Urza's mad in 1,000 different ways, but he does remember, and he has learned. He knows how to fight this war differently. He knows not to make the old mistakes. I've been listening to him, but I wasn't watching him. Urza lies to himself as much as he lies to you or to me, but that hasn't stopped him from doing what he has done. Until now, I've got to go back, Retepe, after tonight. I've got to find him and tell him about Gix and about the Thran. There's a part of him that needs to know, deserves to know, everything that I know. You won't go alone, will you? Ephraim Pucar is going to need true leaders. True. But for Ephraim Pucar's sake, Urza needs a Mishra that I can trust. The Guru Moon was the evening star this midsummer season, far brighter than the star Retepe called the Sea Star, and Zancha called Baralu. It pierced the deepening twilight like a faintly malevolent diamond. Every world that Zancha remembered where sent its races came together to talk and create societies. Folk looked overhead and recited myths about the stars, the moon, and the wanderers. Galmany was no exception, but the glimmer moon was. It was bright. It wandered. Everybody saw it. Everybody knew it. By some unspoken agreement, nobody included it in their myths. Like a loud, uninvited guest, the glimmer moon was acknowledged across the island with averted eyes and silence. Even knowing what an important part it would play this evening, neither Zancha nor Pepe could look at it for long, and the pall it cast ineffectively ended their conversation. Other friendlier stars made their nightly appearance. Avatar's gong clanged to announce the holy book's procession from the sanctuary altar to the white-draped dais. Zanja found herself breathing in painful gasps, expecting the spiders to scream while the litter was in transit. She clutched Urza's waxen lumps in her fists and had the Mnemonic for its armor at the edge of her mind, but the glitter moon didn't strike at zenith in the night's early hours. She couldn't truly relax that the book was on the dais, and the priests had begun to recite what other passage traditions declared appropriate for the fourth night at the Festival of Fruits. The memory of her one exposure to the spiders kept her nerves jangled. Urza had been studying increasing the range and power of his tiny artifacts. What if the combination of wax and armor weren't enough? The level part of the roof where they stood was a small square, 3 paces on a side, 12 in all, which she traced first to the left and then to the right. "Stop placing, please," Vatepa begged. "You're making me nervous. You're making me dizzy." Sanja couldn't stand still as she slid over the edge of the roof and into the garret, where the unusable pacing area was somewhat smaller. She'd worked up a clinging sweat before thousands of insects got between her ears and her mind. She put the wax plugs into her ears and got Urza's armor out of the cyst within a few heartbeats, but not before she was gasping on the floor. Vatepa appeared in the garret window just as she'd recovered enough to stand. He grabbed her hand. Sanja could feel his excitement, but she had become deaf even to her own voice. They didn't need words, though, to return to the roof where Vatepe's swinging arm showed her where to look for already fallen sleepers. They'd gotten lucky, she thought, observing in sterile silence. Some of the effed red stripes must have known that they were Phyrexians within the cadre. Red stripes distanced themselves of their fallen comrades, and in one instance that unfolded in the torchlit areas inside the guild roof, turned their weapons on one another. From the beginning, Vatepa had been concerned with the problem of how unaffected folks might interpret the sleeper's collapse. The truth seemed to be that resolving itself was more favorable. She could see men and women whose mouths were moving, and she could wish she could see ask Vatepa what they were shouting. Probably she could have asked. It was hearing the answer that no wish could grant her. The first of the shatter spirits did its damage as a section of the red stripe bear collapsed. She could see the description from the roof, which was higher than the first of several walls that encircled the palace. The folk in the plaza wouldn't have seen anything, but they might have heard the walls fall, or the inevitable shouts as flame poked through the revel. Overturned lamps and such finished what the shatter spirits had begun. In all, Sanja thought it was going very well. She was surprised that Vatepa wasn't jubilant. She tried to ask him with gestures and the old hand code that she and Urza had devised, and that lacking foresight at the moment, she'd failed to teach him. Vatepa pointed towards Avahir's temple, where the shatter spires had yet to produce any obvious damage, and no priests, sleepers, or otherwise were visible in the pools of torchlight. Could Gix have ordered a search that had removed her handiwork? The Phyrexian's presence in Avahir's temple had been noticed both less tainted within the glistening oil scent when Zanja had made her second visit to Pinkar City, and all but absent this past afternoon. But if the demon had scoured the temple's walls, wouldn't he have checked the Red Stripe Barracks too, or the plaza itself? Were completed Phyrexians truly lacking in suspicious imagination? There was a fury around the dais. The holy readers were no longer reciting, and other priests had joined them, getting in one another way as they closed the great book and made haste to get the litter beneath it. That would explain Vatepa's distress. He wanted Avahir's book inside the sanctuary when, if, the altar collapses. But there was no more she should worry about. Red-striped cadres had spilled from the barracks and the temples. They began ruthlessly to restore order in the crowded crowd. Their only opposition came from those other red stripes who turned on the disabled sleepers when the spiders began to scream. It seemed that some sleepers and Phyrexians hadn't been affected by Urza's artifacts, or even more incredibly, that some of Funds had so embraced Phyrexian alterations that they pursued themselves even after the Phyrexians had followed. Sanja grabbed Vatepa's sleeve and made him face her. "What's going on down there?" she demanded. "Is it over? Can I plug my ears?" He shrugged helplessly, and consumed by frustration, Sanja stuck a finger in one ear. The spiders hadn't stopped screaming, and breaking the seal that protected her from their power was an insane, terrible mistake. Sanja lost all awareness and sense of herself until she was on her back. Vatepa knelt over her, pressing his fingers over her ears. One hand was bloody, and she felt it strong enough to push them both away where Tepe had helped her stand. The situation had changed in the plaza. Some of the second wave of websites had succumbed to the spider screaming. They were literally torn apart by the effing mob, and gruesome though it was to watch, it was also instructive. The resistant red stripes were more complete than Zancha or the already fallen sleepers. To bite their seeming immortal skins, they had bones of metal, wired sinews, and veins that spilled glistening oil into the cobstones. The oil didn't truly glisten in the malevolent shades of green and purple until someone discovered, as Urza had discovered a little time ago, that glistening oil burned. A slow-moving question that was not her own passed through Zancha's mind, and with Tepe's too. He staggered and might have fallen from the roof as Zancha hand-grabbed him. Across the plaza, most of its funds were not so fortunate, though they had less to fail. All whom Zancha could see shook themselves back to their senses and stood up unharmed. None of the F1s, including Watepe, could know what had happened, but Zancha, who knew a demon's touch when she felt it, looked for a strand of ruby-red light and found it sweeping through the smoke above the burning oil. Gix. Zancha's hand rose to her throat. She broke the crystal. Watepe watched her do it. He asked questions she couldn't hear, and she answered with the demon's name. Ava hear sweet mercy. She read the prayer from Ratepe's lips. In the plaza, the frantic priests of Avahir had finally slung the litter poles beneath the holy book in position to carry the volume back to the sanctuary. The building had still to show any signs of damage from the shatter spider. The sanctuary might not show such damage to observers on the guild in roof. They hadn't expected or intended to bring the greater outer walls down, merely the altar and the dormitory cloister beyond the sanctuary, and of course the spiral staircase down to the crypt. Zancha didn't know whether to relax or to relieve, or rapture her apposition tighter. When the priests successfully navigated through the plaza strong, and Avatir's holy book disappeared into the sanctuary. Ratepe was obviously more anxious, but his lips moved too quickly for her to read his words. Even after he'd asked him to slow down and speak distinctly. Then something happened to make Ratepe put his hands over his ears. All across the plaza, Efren's hitherto unaffected were reacting to a painful noise, but there were no red stripes, no Phyrexians to take advantage of them. All of them, sleepers and compliate, those already dead and those still alive, simply exploded, bursting like sun-ripened corpse. Suddenly, as Urza had promised, with the power to shake glistening oil until it pulled apart, the gloomy moon had struck its zenith. Everything had that at that moment been mere forewarning. Zancha's whole body tingled from the inside out. If Urza's armor failed, she'd be dead before she knew she was endangered. She tried to imagine scenes in all the other cities where she and Urza planted the spiders, but Dominarians on their knees, as Ratepe was, perhaps Zarbus blood that glistened malevolently in the moonlight, all of which wondered if they were true to their lies. The red stripe bear collapsed, and through her feet, Zancha headed cut. If the red stripe bear collapsed, and through her feet, Zancha heard the ground wail. A cloud of dust was as large as the guild inn billowed through sanctuary doors, a cloud that rose quickly to hide the temple and half the plaza from Zancha's blued view. Cut. The red stripe bear collapsed, and through her feet, Zancha heard the ground wail. A cloud of dust was as large as the inn billowed through sanctuary doors, a cloud that rose quickly to hide a temple and half the plaza from Zancha's view. When the dust had settled, some, and she said, every Efruin saw that the great dome above the altar and the gong tower, shadows in the night moments earlier, were both missing. From his knees, Ratepe lowered his hands and pounded the roof with his fists. A god who couldn't protect his book and his sanctuary were cut From his knees, Ratape lowered his hands and pounded the roof with his fists. A god who couldn't protect his book or his sanctuary was apt to lose the face of his worshippers. Sacha didn't know the depth of Ratape's face, but she guessed it had been shaken to its roots. Cut. Sacha didn't know the depth of Ratape's faith, but she guessed it had been shaken to its roots. She was shaken further when an intense red glow filled Avahir's sanctuary, overflowing through the open doors, the windows, and the roof. Sacha saw the world on fire on Ratape's lips. But the light wasn't fire. It was Gix. It was shaken further when an intense red glow filled Avahir's sanctuary, overflowing through the open doors, the windows, and the roof. Sancha saw the word fire on Tepe's lips, but the light wasn't fire. It was Gix. Sancha broke the chain that had held Urza's penchant around her neck. She held the crystal up to the crimson light. Very clearly, it was broken. And just as clearly, Urza wasn't coming. He hadn't said where he'd go to watch the Glimmer Moon strike its zenith. He could have gone to the Glimmer Moon itself, or he could have remained on the Othran Ridge cottage. Or Urza's absence could mean that Gix was not the only demon on Dominaria soil, and that Urza was already in deep, desperate brawl. Urza could walk anywhere, but even he couldn't be in two places at once. The red light within Avahir's sanctuary grew brighter and larger. It fluctuated and emitted serpentine flares that flitted slowly in the night. The smell of Phyrexians grew steadily stronger. Sancha imagined Gix burning and battering his way up from the catacombs. She wondered if he had the power to destroy a city, and didn't doubt for a heartbeat that the demon would, if he could. There's nothing Sancha could do to stop Gix, and until she was sure that the spires were exhausted, there's nothing she dared do to spurt herself and Ratape away. Vast crimson fingers leapt from the roofless sanctuary. They soared into the sky, then arced towards the plaza. Looking up, Sancha and everyone else saw that the fingers were hollow, filled with darkness and fanged like serpents. The darkness resembled the upright passageway to Phyrexia that she'd seen in the crypt. Sancha feared they'd all be sucked into the fourth sphere. Ratape put his arms around her, and Sancha wrapped hers around him. She wanted to feel his warmth, more to flush with her fingers, and couldn't have cared if the spiders killed her. Except that she wouldn't force Ratape to watch her die. She saw a ribbon of silvery light emerge from the center of the palace. Divine and soaring, the palace lights pierced every serpent and drew them all together with a choking knot before dragging them over the north wall and out to sea. Sancha shouted, "Urza!" at Ratape, who didn't need a few more heartbeats before the shape of his lips around the name. Gix fought back, but as Sancha would have suspected, Urza was more than a match for a Phyrexian demon, or a Thran one. Neither duelist was visible from the plaza or the roof, though they knew exactly where they'd be. They fought with light and fire, with artifacts and creatures that defied naming in any language Sancha knew. Gix would have lost quickly if the demon had not aimed most of his destruction at the Efruin survivors in the plaza, and thereby forced Urza to defend the innocent. Then Urza loosed two weapons at once, bolts of lightning to counter Gix's last cowardly thrust, and a dragon shaped like the one he'd ridden into Phyrexia, but shaped from golden light. Stars shone through the dragon's wings, but its power was anything but illusionary. A jet of intense blue flame shot from his mouth as it began a swoop that would take it into Gix's lair. Gix didn't die fighting, nor did he retreat to Phyrexia. Instead, he abandoned Pinkar City altogether, a relatively small green streak racing to the south, a half-breadth ahead of the dragon's flame. Sancha expected the dragon to pursue Gix over the horizon, but continued its stoop into the ruined sanctuary. She braced herself for the physical shock of a crash that never came. A heartbeat, and another, and the dragon lifted into flight again, showing first its wings, then its spidery torso, and at last, clasped in a pair of legs, a book that had recently seemed very large and now looked quite small. The dragon beat its translucent wings twice for altitude, then it stopped again and set Avahir's holy book on a battered dais before climbing back into the sky. The dragon circled out to the sea, Avahir's home, according to the myth. The Efuin still standing in Tudun Ratape set up a cheer in its wake, but Urza wasn't finished. He brought the dragon back. Sanjay had sworn he shrank it a bit too, for a gentle glide over the palace roofs. Though its bright, shifting light, Sanjay wasn't sure if he had picked up something until it was right overhead, and she could see a frail old man getting the ride of his life. It was a miracle of another sort that Taberna's heart didn't fail before the dragon set him down beside Avahir's holy book. The dragon flew straight up, after that, and disappeared among the stars. The FNs who cheered the survivor of their book went wild when they saw their king. Sanjay couldn't get Ratepe's attention, no matter how hard she pounded on his back or how loudly she shouted. Is it over? Can I release Urza's armor? Yes, it's over, Zadcha. Urza's voice spoke to Zadcha's thoughts. You heard, she replied, releasing the armor and pulling the wax out of her ears. You came. The cheer of the crowd, after total silence, was deafening as the spiders. Zadcha had trouble hearing Urza when he said, still in her mind, I have been here all along. Keep my eyes on Gix. I didn't want to frighten you. Waste not, want not. How long had Urza known? Zadcha hadn't kept her thoughts private. Urza pulled the question from her mind and answered it. Since the priest in the orchard. I went back to all the haunted places. I saw how the Phyrexians had crept into my world again. I found Taberna in a cell beneath the palace. He was quite mad, but still himself. The Phyrexians needed to trot him out periodically, and he could only do what they did to Mishra because he carried the weak stone. So I stole Taberna from them and hid him in another plane. That, I confess, was the act that brought Gis here to Pingar City. Since then, everything I've done, everything I've had you do, has been built up towards this moment. I healed Taberna. Madness, you know, sinks deep roots in a man's soul. Once he's seen sights and thought thoughts no man should ever see or think. There are some moments he'd never remember again. Moments such as I wish I could forget. The Shrada could not be deceived, Zadcha. So they were killed while Taberna watched. But he'll live another 10 years and sire another son or two. I guarantee it. Zadcha had warned her slave. Assume that if you've thought about it, Urza knows it. Then she had failed to remember her own advice. You've had no reason to be suspicious, Zadcha. There's never been anyone who could do for me what I've done for Taberna. Urza was on the roof with them, looking very ordinary. He had no trouble getting Ratepe's attention, but was unprepared when Tepe threw himself in a joyous, tearful embrace. The affection Efruins had for their elderly king, whose speech none of them could hope to hear through the shouting, was nothing. Zadcha wanted to understand that it was also clear that Urza had done exactly what was necessary to ensure that the realm would recover from its long battering. Zadcha stood a bit apart from Ratepe and Urza, giving herself a few moments to consider all that she had learned. She stayed apart when Urza extended his hand. What happens next? She demanded, thinking deliberately of Gix. I go to Koilos. She folded her arms. Not alone. Not after going after Gix. Urza frowned and sighed. No, I suppose not. He turned to Ratepe. And you, brother, I suppose you'll want to come too. That was chapter 23 of Planeswalker. Please like, subscribe, and follow on YouTube and your chosen Plotfest platform. Thanks for listening.